conspiracies, endless wars, hidden forbidden history, the depopulation agenda, cryptozoology, mystical visions, hidden mysteries, advanced subterranean civilizations, flying saucers, alien abductions, and secret space programs, time travel, wellness, and healthy living. Where do you go to find out about these subjects and more? To James Bartley's Cosmic Switchboard Show. That's where. James Bartley will provide cutting-edge information and will interview the top investigators and researchers in a variety of fields. Listen in every week to the Cosmic Switchboard Show, hosted by James Bartley.
Hello, everybody. This is James Bartley with the Cosmic Switchboard Show. My very special guest today is Eve Lorgan. Eve Lorgan is a longtime colleague of mine. We worked a lot together in the old days in Southern California, the high desert of Southern California, throughout California and the Southwest. As a matter of fact, Eve is an international author and international researcher and lecturer. She has spoken in many places throughout the U.S. So without any further ado, my dear friend, Eve Lorgan.
Thank you, James. It's a pleasure being on your show because I know that we can probably talk for hours. So I appreciate you inviting me on, and I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about, especially the old things that we remembered together in our early work. So it should be a dynamic show. Start off by just a general introduction that I've been a researcher of the, it started out as the alien abduction phenomena in, you know, the early days, although it expanded to MKUltra, mind control, all kinds of psychological ramifications, post-traumatic stress, basically how people deal with these kinds of experiences that I actually term anomalous trauma now, because it's easier to just say that as opposed, because there's so many different kinds of anomalous experiences that when, as you know, when we studied, you know, alien abductions in the beginning, it's actually turned into a Pandora's box that opened up many, many different doors of kinds of experiences and realities in this world, such as, you know, the military abductions and all that. So my previous education and career was as a biochemist. And then after that, I decided to change careers, study oriental medicine for a while, and then went into counseling psychology with a focus on marriage and family and interpersonal relationships. And the mentor that I studied under that inspired me very much is a man who is a therapist in San Diego. And he actually did a workshop on trauma and addictions years ago. And that really woke me up and inspired me to study and learn much more about trauma in particular. And not only that, but how trauma and addictions do go together and the recovery process of what people do to get through trauma and why so many people who've had different kinds of traumas will do something to numb themselves or to distract themselves from that trauma that could be, you know, hidden in their subconscious. And I think this actually happens to people who've had, you know, alien abductions, visitations, even UFO sightings where there might be missing time and they don't realize it, or they've had an encounter and it's been completely blocked out of their memory. And of course, with people who've had any kind of long-term childhood abuse, they may have PTSD or complicated PTSD, as well as people who've been through what we call the MyLab experience that includes MKUltra. And what I'm finding out now, too, is that there's a large element of occult ritual abuse within the MyLab experience, depending on what they're used for. And I don't know, I'm sure you found that out yourself as well, James, that you know, this is a rabbit hole that I had no idea how deep it would go in the beginning, you know, years. So it's really developed into a lot of different kinds of research. But for me, the most important thing is the therapeutic aspect of the person in terms of how they can get through these experiences and receive some kind of reflective empathy and be able to maybe resolve the traumas in a way that they can cope and accept their life or work in ways to get out from under being victimized in ways they don't want to be victimized Or, for example, if they don't want to be accessed anymore by these alien beings, or if they don't want to be abducted or accessed by MKUltra handlers, what can they do in their healing process to take into consideration not just the trauma resolution and the PTSD, but how they can regain sovereignty on a spiritual level and become strong and integrated so that they are more resilient to these forms of what we're calling interference on many levels. So, I mean, there's so much that we've learned over the years, and I've learned a lot, especially about, I think, mind control and the what I'm calling the spiritual warfare element and the hyperdimensional interference element that works in collusion with and kind of like overlays some of these physical experiences. And I think they work hand in hand in a kind of control system. And I'm sure you recognize that as well. And we could talk about that more at length in terms of, you know, I mean, we noticed this with the love bite. Actually, the whole alien abduction phenomena was a window that enabled us to see much more what was happening on other levels of reality. So in the beginning, you know, people thought, oh, well, these are physical events, and many of them are, or they're taken, and they may have a medical examination, missing time. They could be taken broad daylight out of their car on a camping trip, or sometimes just from their bedroom at night, and some kind of medical thing is done. They might put in implants. But along with that, there's other elements of interaction and what I'm calling the manipulation and the testing and training and even the love bite, where they put people together in these love connections and they test them under these things in these virtual reality scenarios or things that seem like dreams, where they test people for their compatibility and they may pre-bond people. So I think I'll just kind of pause because there's so much here already that we could actually go over some things that maybe happened in the past with that Barbara Bartholik, who was a mentor of mine and James, and also the mentor of the late Dr. Carla Turner. And it was really Barbie's mentorship and help during this time to help us understand the deeper elements of what was going on in classic alien contact and visitation experiences. So if it hadn't been for Barbie, I think I could have gone through a lot of misery. And you know, during the time where we were doing the support group in the 90s, you know, there were several of us in the group who were going through these love obsessions that were being engineered by our alien handlers, or in some cases by some kind of military element, or I'm calling maybe even a mind control element that has access to technologies that can affect you in the dream state, for example. So, and if it hadn't been for Barbie and knowing this, I think that it would have been more difficult to get through, because in my own, you know, life, it almost culminated into a near-death experience and something that was so profound and so devastating that it was like loss of my entire identity. But for me, it was almost like a shamanic initiation, where the depth of that experience actually took me to another level of transcendent awareness. Which, you know, I don't know if everybody will agree on that. Everybody has their own unique experience to this kind of thing. But for me, it opened up a panorama of awareness and realization on deeper levels that helped me see things from a more expansive perspective. In a way, I mean, it was good and bad, these experiences. But they continue to happen to people. And I think that the hyperdimensional aspect is actually more prevalent than we really take into consideration. And this happens to people who don't have what I call the classic alien abduction experience, that some of this hyperdimensional, even though what we're calling the dark side of Cupid love bite relationship, doesn't necessarily have to happen to somebody who's a Malab or MKUltra person or an abductee or a contactee. It could happen to anyone, and they maybe they're at the right place at the right time, and they fall into one of these situations. So that's actually what I'm coming across now in my clientele. People who are running into this kind of thing with what we're calling the new type of predator. So, and we actually talked about a lot of this on our earlier panels that, you know, James and myself and Tom Montauk, Carissa Conte, Laura Leon, and Bernard Gunther and some other colleagues took part in, where we got to talk at length about the love bite, you know, all the different things that happen from our own personal experience as well as others that we have as clients. And I think I'm so glad that we got to do that panel, because it opened up a whole area that rarely gets to be discussed. And so this is actually in my first book, but I think we've learned a lot more since that time. Wouldn't you agree, James? that we've learned a lot more since those days?
Yes, we have. The alien love bite itself was quite a learning curve because of the heart-wrenching emotional anguish at times that people going through it, like myself, like yourself, go through. But I must say that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Some people going through it at the moment and are aware that it's an alien love bite scenario may feel that there's no way out. But I can assure them that although it took me at least 3 years to get over my particular love bite situation, it can be done. And all a winner needs to know is that another winner did it first. And there are many winners out there that have overcome the alien love bite. So, you know, we're beckoning, we're calling upon those that are going through this. Hang in there, buddy. Hang in there, lady. It does get better. And since we're on the subject, it would be a good idea to segue from the alien love bite into what we've been discussing of late, the hyperdimensional interference and all of its manifestations. Do you want to tell the listeners in general what the alien love bite is and talk about some cases that you'd worked on in the past?
Sure. Well, the alien love bite started out as the recognition that, let's say, two alien abductees or people who knew that they had, let's say, regular alien visitations in their life, but what we'd call a multiple alien abductee. Maybe that's what they'd say in the old days, but somebody who has repeated experiences in their life or in their bloodline, that they are set up sometimes pre-bonded as children, teenagers, or sometimes maybe in adulthood several times in these experiences that take place in another reality. And this other reality could be, you know, a real physical, quote, abduction, where they take you on board a craft, where on this craft that, you know, you engage in these different behaviors or things or like tests to see if a bonding takes place under different conditions. And a lot of times the aliens will do this. They'll be like the watchers or the monitors of, let's say, children or teenagers or adults on how they would bond several times throughout their life. And then later in life, they finally meet. And sometimes, you know, before they meet, they may have a precognitive vision or a dream, or maybe even if they're aware, they'll have an abduction that they meet this person. They're impressed with their face in their mind, and they know that they know them because they have this memory. It's like a deja vu of knowing them deeply, like on a very deep soul level. And sometimes that knowing is like you've made love to them before and you have this body memory. It's like there's another part of you that knows you know this person. And then you may meet like within the next few days or a week, and then you have this deja vu, and sometimes the other person will remember and have a, you know, a recognition, or sometimes they don't. But then that sets off a type of love obsession, usually with there's one that's more obsessed than the other, but sometimes it's both. And this is like the classic alien love bite, where the alien handlers of each person actually engineered this setup, sometimes from childhood, but not always. Sometimes it's just they do them in adult years, you know, or a few months ahead of time, and then they meet. And sometimes there's an agenda behind it as well. Like, you know, maybe these people work on a project together that helps, you know, carry out some of the alien agenda or something, or have children or whatever. So that was more of the alien love bite. And then it would go through stages, which there would be, you know, emotional obsession, like a love obsession with the telepathic and empathic connections. There's very palpable with synchronicities and paranormal things that may happen throughout the drama of the love obsession. They may have more alien visitations during that time, more supernatural things during that time. And, you know, sometimes their energy bodies become drained. And then when what Barbie would tell us, you know, there would be a love obsession, but then there would be a type of emotional highs and crashing lows, and the different like a high drama situation would be set up so that one person would be set up to emotionally crash, or the other partner would be manipulated to do something that would cause the other one to be triggered in such a way that, you know, all this emotional energy and hopes and dreams of, you know, having their soulmate consummated or whatever it is would be built up in their minds and their bodies and their obsessions, and they meet and then something happens and it's like a crashing low where it's a horrible insult that really deeply hurts the other person, or they just can't consummate the relationship because all these things, you know, happen that just prevent them from connecting. So, and it seems like it's manipulated and orchestrated in all these different ways with synchronicities and that kind of thing. So that's what we learned. And then the switching off is like a psychic unplugging that can happen with one of the partners that's deliberately unplugged, by the aliens who are actually engineering this whole thing. And you know, there could be implants involved in some of this as well. And even in the Ted Rice case, which is in the Love Bite book that I wrote, I actually just zeroed in on the alien love bite aspect, but actually this whole story is written in Carla Turner's story called Masquerade of Angels. And that was the Ted Rice case that Barbara Bartholik helped do many of the hypnotic regressions to retrieve the entirety of Ted's experiences, which was, you know, a lot. And it was very revealing because it went through many layers of the screen memories that revealed a deeper, darker underbelly of not only the reptilian aliens and how the alien love bite was put together, but the cloning, which, you know, wasn't even really known at that time, and the whole cloning thing, as well as how many beings appeared to be working together in tandem for this overall cloning replication process and whatever they were doing, let's say in Ted's case and many children that he was taken with as well. So he remembers like a group abduction thing where kids in his junior high school were taken together and bonded. Several of them were bonded together in these love bite scenarios. So in that particular case, he actually remembered that the alien, I don't know if it was Alien Gray in his particular case, but his original memory was he thought angels came to put him and his sweetheart together, this girl that he was going to school with, that he didn't have any feelings for, you know, before. And when they put them together, it was like a type of a procedure with a candy cane object by the Alien Gray that was weaving in Ted's heart energy, the energy of the woman into Ted's heart. So it was like a manipulation of the heart chakra energies, where they weaved in the woman's essence into Ted's heart, but they actually didn't reverse the process. So it was actually what I call a one-sided love bite. So it was a love obsession on his side that lasted for many years. So this was actually, you know, talked about in the book, in The Masquerade of Angels, as well as my book, to just show, you know, how many years this kind of thing can go on without even knowing this whole thing was a manipulation. So that was like a classic alien love bite, because they did it from an early age and then they, you know, put them together later in life. And, you know, it was a crashing low, emotional high, crashing low, and it was very devastating actually for Ted. So this kind of thing Barbie saw over and over again with many people. And we started to see this within the people, the alien abductee community, as well as the MILABs. So the MILABs had, my lab people had this very strongly as well, where they're set up sometimes in situations where they're handled together by the military who are working in conjunction with some alien groups like the reptilians. And they may bond these people together so they can work on ops together, because they're basically some kind of MKUltra offshoot who are used as assets in these, you know, secret space program, or what do you want to call it. So there's that kind of love bite where it's a MILAB type of thing. There was a case actually that I wanted to talk about, even though it wasn't a classic. Well, it is a classic, but it's not classic. It was a case that Barbara Bartholik had that she kept in her files, but we never released it because it was really considered, it was too, people wouldn't accept it. There's a lot of things about Barbie's work that was poo-pooed and frowned upon in the current research community, or the ones who are on the speaking circuit who were the more popular researchers. You know, I mean, you know this because we saw this together, right, James, when we would go to conferences. And then people would want to talk about the happy, crappy Space Brother stuff, or the more popular, what's the popular flavor of the week kind of mentality. And then when we come on the stage, or with Barbie would start showing her material, people would walk away all pissed off, people who were still under the alien mind control. And so I think there's a lot of mind control going on in this this community. But one case that I know that James is also familiar with, it, we called it the Mary Henry case. It's in my Dark Side of Cupid book. And the name I used was Mariah and the Seductive Spirit Guide. And what's interesting about this particular case is that Mariah was a woman. She was like a mother of like eight children who she had several hypnotic regressions that actually uncovered the same beings that had interacted with her as a child also later in life. But how it interacted with her as a child, she had, let's say, a dental procedure where she was given, in those days, she was given ether, and she had an out-of-the-body experience during that procedure while she was in the dentist chair. And then she saw these several beings who basically, you know, through this golden light or whatever, when she goes out of her body, and these beings are saying, well, we were waiting for you. And there were several beings who had what she called, they looked like they had this skull cap on, like a black skull cap, in such a way they look like they had Widow's Peak hairline. And so later in life, these same beings showed up in a classic alien abduction that, you know, took her, gave her something like 1.5 hours missing time, where she was taken. And there was also Nordics on this craft, as well as the ones with the, it's like they had this cap, a Widow's Peak cap. And so she also encountered the Widow's Peak hair people in a more, it was a more of a demonic kind of situation where some paranormal and supernatural activity was taking place as a result of her being led to do automatic writing. And so she was led to do automatic writing about, I guess, 1.5 to 2 years after the classic abduction, where something happened where she actually had her rheumatoid arthritis healed in her hands. And it was actually something that was really positive that happened after the event. And she didn't remember what had happened. All she knows is she had her hands were healed, and, you know, it was amazing. So anyway, she did go to get a hypnotic regression by a psychiatrist. This one wasn't Barbie, but it was somebody else. And then she, it was kind of like a classic abduction. But what was interesting is she reported things that only later were discussed about. So she talked about the, let's say, the nursery of the hybrid children long before Bud Hopkins even came out with that material. So it was something that's consistent in the testimonies of many of the people having abductions. She was put in a tall plexiglass like cylinder naked, and where a blue light would come up and like sterilize her. And the cylinders are also being reported with some of the cloning things actually. And then, I mean, I could even read some of what I wrote in my book because I think it's interesting. Okay, so I'm just going to read it, unless you had a question now, James, before I just kind of read some of this, what she remembered in a regression, Mariah and the Spirit Guide case, because I was going to read some of what she remembered in her original regression that actually the psychiatrist did, but Barbie didn't do, but I think it's significant. Based on some things that I heard later from other people about actually hybrid gestation, which I think is really interesting because of the kinds of beings that she encountered in her experience were they appeared to be Nordic types. And I'm just going to read you what she described of that regression, okay?
Please do so.
Okay. So she said, I found myself in a tall plexiglass-like cylinder that was like a large test tube. I was naked, unable to move, but could see a cobalt blue light emanating from the bottom of the tube. The light came up around me, almost like a sterilization or cleansing effect. The thought occurred to me, I wonder if this is what it's like to be a test tube baby. I wasn't afraid. I wondered where in the hell I was. The next thing I remember, I'm lying on an examining table with a tall blonde man on my left. He was wearing a small Nehru-type collar. I didn't understand their speech, but they spoke telepathically and told me that I could be communicating by way of symbols and that she could translate this according to her understanding of language. The tall blonde man, who was human-looking, told me I had nothing to fear. I felt no fear whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I don't think I felt love, but I was in lust with this blonde being. I was taken then to another area where I was monitored by some kind of X-ray machine, like a CAT scan that pictured all my organs. Then they took me to another room that looked like a prenatal nursery. They explained to me, this is interesting, that virgin births take place throughout the universe and especially in our own galaxy. The babies start out as female, and if they want a male, they take a semen specimen from a male and inject it into the fetus at a particular time of gestation. In a matter of 4 to 5 months, it develops into a full-blown baby that looks like a 9-month-old full-term baby. She goes on to say, I felt very comfortable and secure about this event. I was not threatened in any way. Okay, I just want to make a comment because this particular observation of not only the virgin birth, but the baby, they gestate in 4 or 5 months to a full-grown baby. That was actually reported by Carolyn Hamlet, who's a satanic ritual abuse survivor, and where she was observed actually what she called a ceremony that two twin flames in this cult would have so that they can have a hybrid Nephilim child. And that in that particular case, those hybrid Nephilim children would go through a very quick gestation period of the same like 4 to 5 months. So I just thought that was interesting because that you don't really hear that much that often. about such a quick gestation, unless it's a certain type of hybrid child. So I'm thinking that whoever these beings were, they were wanting to create different kinds of hybrids that are normally talked about. Yeah, so anyway, after, I guess it was a year and a half after she had that abduction, then the automatic writing started. And then it was just simple and pleasant where a particular being came through that I think it was claiming it was from another star system, from a galaxy and the Orion's Belt. And they claimed to be looking for emissaries and intermediaries between their race and Earth. And they were using different people. And Mariah was one of the chosen few. That's common with some of this channeling stuff. They didn't say why, and nor did they mention the UFO encounter she had in 72, and she didn't even think this was connected at the time. But the messages started with the flatteries and that she was intelligent and no one really recognized me, and I don't need to go into detail. It was the typical flatteries that make them feel important, that they have a special role as an emissary for these space beings and that Earth is going to go through this cleansing effect and she needed to help, you know, tell people, blah, blah, blah. So that was part of the thing that started with. But then another being started taking center stage. And this was the one that claimed to be the dead spirit of a country guitar singer named Jim Reeves. And at the time, Mariah didn't even know who this country singer was. It was like she didn't even really like that kind of music, so it was just kind of weird, you know? But then this particular spirit guide basically guided her to listen, or I don't know, to a song. I led her to a song on the radio that played one of his songs. And it was like one of these synchronistic things where he's psychically leading her, you know, to turn on the radio, and lo and behold, this song comes on the radio of one of his songs, like this real Jim Reeves country guitar singer. But the thing is, this is so classic. The song at the time, she only remembered it because at that time in her life, so which was many, many years ago, she was going through a very, very difficult time in her marriage. And at that time, she had like 8 kids, right? And a husband who was in the military, who was unavailable. He was traveling a lot. And apparently, her husband at that time in her life, when that song was playing a lot, was real popular at the time, he was having an affair. And so she was emotionally like devastated, you know, that her husband's having an affair here. She's trapped with 8 kids, can't afford to, you know, do anything. And so basically that song brought up all these memories of trauma and emotional devastation and heartbreak. And so you have to ask yourself, you know, why is the spirit guide bringing that up now? You know? And we know now, I mean, James and I know from other people we've, you know, interviewed, that sometimes the reptilians or the MyLab controllers, depending on who's working with them, will deliberately cause that person to go back into a flashback of a trauma event because they're wanting to bring up those emotions. So it's a kind of like feeding thing, or they want to re-traumatize them. Anyway, the spirit guide thing kept leading to more and more seductive things where she would have the, you know, the spirit fondle her and seduce her, and it would be very real, as if this was taking place physically. I mean, it wasn't just astral stuff, but that happened too. But she was having this being basically make love to her in the middle of the day as if it was a full-on physical thing. I mean, full-on physical stuff. So as that was happening, she actually could go out of her body when this would happen. And, you know, this being's making love to her, but she's out of the body. She's able to watch it, and she could see this being overshadowing her body while it's having sex with her. And so this would go on for several months until another spirit shows up. And another spirit shows up as this female entity that with dark hair and a widow's peak hairline. And then this female entity is like, you know, a friend of this other spirit, right? And then she overshadows her body while the spirit's making love to her so that she could experience the passion. So it's like all these entities are wanting to feed on this passion of, you know, when they're having sex. But pretty soon, more and more voices would start coming through. So it wasn't just Jim Reeves or these original alien beings, but it was the woman being, and then it was other beings. And then they would tell her, you know, you have to do this, and urgent messages of these changes that are going to take place. And it just went on and on until there was just like too many voices, right? And then voices telling her to harm her kids and throw pot of coffee over her kids. So it basically proceeded into open up all these doorways and these demonic doorways where, you know, she was just basically being harassed by all these entities and nearly possessed. So anyway, she finally got out of that situation. I mean, she had to go to a priest on the day that these entities were basically not leaving her alone and putting her through a type of ritual where it was really strange. I mean, she remembered the height of sexual passion, being on this altar table and having these beings, these dark robed beings, like march around backwards, you know, doing these barks and screams and singing, and seeing herself being made love to with all these spirits. And then, you know, she thought it was a, she called it a Widdershins, a satanic or witch Widdershins. That's what she thought it was. But it kept progressing into more and more demonic stuff. So finally, she did have to go to a psychiatrist and a priest and, you know, go in, take medication for several weeks, be in an inpatient facility. And I think that was the time she also contacted Barbie and basically realized that all this stuff basically led up to this demonic situation of near possession. But it was connected to the beings, and it was connected very much to the channeling and the love bite situation. Except in her situation, she was actually, you know, being seduced by the spirit itself, which she realized later wasn't the, you know, the guitar singer. It really was a reptilian. So she saw that shape shift towards the end. She realized that whole thing was a con, including the Nordic beings. Apparently, they were also reptilians. So that was that story, and I have that written in The Dark Side of Cupid to basically show the progression of the kinds of things that happened that, you know, at the time, nobody would want to hear these stories, but I put them in my book, so.
Well, I'm glad you did, because it highlights some key issues, the juxtaposition, the enmeshment between the highly technological on the one hand, i.e. the ETs utilizing advanced genetic techniques to essentially fast grow clone babies or hybrid babies, whatever the case may be. And then on the other hand, you cited the case of that one woman who had to endure the SRA, and she observed, at least what she observed, it may have been more, where they were utilizing ceremonial chanting to create the same effect, essentially. So
yeah. I mean, that was a good case, although I think I sent you the link. It was the Carolyn Hamlet case of the fifth fire initiation and the reptilian replication article. And the fifth fire initiation, what is the one where she described there was a one of her mentors in this cult before she got out of it was, a twin flame partner with another man that took a ritual and a type of vow to do this for, you know, the hierarchy, because they thought it was good, you know, and that doing this fifth fire initiation with twin flames, it actually created a full possession takeover of the woman who was going to be pregnant or whatever. And then she ended up conceiving this Nephilim hybrid child that basically gestated very quickly and actually grew up to adulthood very quickly. But it was like full-on kind of psychopathic type of hybrid creature. But it was interesting because this whole twin flame thing was talked about by Carolyn Hamlet within their own ritual, which is very scary, because what we're seeing now in a lot of these dark side of Cupid relationships is what people think is a real twin flame connection, where they're sensing that they have these astral unions or a strong connection with someone they know, let's say physically, and then the astral counterpart comes to them and makes love to them, and they have these fantastic unions. They think it's a twin flame, but really what's happening is they're linking up with the entity that's hosting or mimicking the partner. So a lot of times in these twin flame things, the person doesn't really have a real physical relationship with that person. Sometimes they do, but most of the time they don't. They may just know them a little bit, but then once they have that initial meeting, they have these repetitive astral connections that's being actually manipulated by the being that's hosting that person. Or that person is actually completely taken over and is basically carrying out this predatorial type of thing through this false twin flame situation. And that, I think, is dangerous.
Yes, and we see manifestations of that in the field, where these people who present themselves as consultants, as therapists, as healers, as gurus, as light workers, they have this kind of hive mind parasite, hyperdimensional matrix effect working through them. And because the internet is an electromagnetic conduit, when people go to these individuals seeking help, consults, therapy, what have you, it allows these predators to really link in, not only with their own abilities, their own psi abilities, but utilizing the internet as a conduit to make it easier to do so.
Yeah. In fact, I believe that now, after people reporting things to me, such as the UFO strip club case.
Yeah.
There was definitely observed through clairvoyant perception. And it's actually confirmed by some other people who saw that, but they just didn't go public with it. But there's a type of technology on craft that's linking itself in with businesses and buildings and people in such a way that when you link up in a sexual environment, let's say a strip club, and you basically are interacting with an infected person in an infected environment, then you get linked up with this much more easily than, let's say, you would with a classic entity attachment situation. And that there seems to be a technology that is causes them to be more robotically taken over, that it seems like there's an AI thing that's running it, and that this is a different kind of takeover, but the technology is assisting this, and it makes it easier for those kinds of linking. Just like you could link up with somebody on the internet, and from a one Facebook message or one email, then you can get a psychic attack that night by somebody just from linking up. There's ways that it's coming through. I don't know how it's working, but we're working with several people who are basically having unusual things happen that is connected to AI. Like they'll have a dark side of Cupid connection with somebody physically, where all they do maybe is hug them and talk to them, and they don't really have, let's say, a sexual relationship or even verbal one much. But then thereafter, they start having the astral connections, and then they will get like their computer hacked and start doing things on its own accord that always lead up to synchronicities linking this person with the love bite person as if they want them to do that. But the other person is acting, let's say the love bitee, who doesn't really have anything to do with them, is acting incongruent, like they don't like them or they don't want to get too close. But basically they're just being used to link up all these people astrally, and then technology is aiding this process somehow. It's like once they become a host and this AI shit's working through them, then the person who's infected, now their computer starts like getting taken over, or their cell phones, or they get weird phone calls, and it's as if it just interacts that way also in connection with the love bite partner. And it goes above and beyond, you know, synchronicities. There's a link up with technology and this weird shit, put it mildly.
Yes, there's this hyperdimensional aspect, which we discussed in a number of recent webinars. And before we go into the hyperdimensional aspect, because it's part and parcel of the alien love bite, part and parcel of the dark Cupid syndrome, Barbie Bartholik referred to the love bite as the drama of the love obsession. And boy, howdy, is that the truth. We are resonators. We are emitters of emotions and feelings. And these archontic parasitical beings strive to keep us in a lower vibratory ebb. That way they can feed off us. And so they create these scenarios where we just exude all these emotions. We spike up on the highs and the lows. For example, a true love between two individuals should never have a love drug feeling. And that is a characteristic of the alien love bite. You used to call it Evie. Getting hit over the head with a love bite.
Oh, yeah, it's like a spell, and you can actually get bliss from it, too. I mean, it's very blissful.
It's blissful. Barbie refers to it as the enchantment, and I refer to it as the love drug, because that's what it feels like. It feels like your glandular system, your endocrinary system, is gushing out all these hormones that just really push the emotional content to one extreme or another, and that's why Barbie called it the drama of the love obsession. Now, a couple of points before you delve into the hyperdimensional aspect, because that's key, and we want to get into that before the first hour is over, is within the context of the two cases you discussed thus far, the satanic ritual abuse case and the classic Mary Henry case, the Mariah case in your book, and also Carla Turner's book, Masquerade of Angels, about the Ted Rice story, cloning and hybridization feature prominently in those stories. And as you pointed out earlier, long before Bud Hopkins, long before a lot of these big names came up with similar findings, Barbara Bartholik predated them. She actually was aware of this decades before, but because she was kind of shunted off to the fringes of the UFO community, oh, Barbara is talking about lizards again,
yeah.
Right? That's what some of these people used to say. She was kind of shunted off to the fringe and was kind of regarded as being kind of out there. But her findings were essentially that cloning is a big part of this. Dr. Carla Turner talked about this a lot. Prior to her passing, Carla and I had a private discussion about what the subsequent volumes of the Ted Rice story were going to be about. She said there was so much material that her and Barbie had amassed in their work with Ted Rice that it was going to take a volume of books, a series of books to cover just Ted Rice's story. And she told me privately that it turned out at one point Ted Rice was taken into that mountain near the ski resort where he was working. He was taken within the mountain, and he saw these glass tubes, and inside the glass tubes was this alien woman who kept showing up to him in childhood.
Maya.
Maya, exactly. She was showing up at key junctures in his life. Well, he finds himself in this underground facility within this mountain range, and lo and behold, there are glass tubes full of these Mayas, right? Nowadays, we have these Johnny-come-latelys come along blowing smoke about military cloning. Oh, 99% of all alien abductions are just military abductions, complete nonsense. And they're going on and on and on about cloning, cloning centers. And really, cloning is literally as old as the mountains. The humans, the human military, were not the first. The non-human beings were always at the forefront of the cloning. And so that must be made clear to the listeners. Whether these people out there that are being pushed by hordes of shills and their stories are really being promoted to give the impression that it's all military, that there's no non-human element. And what we're telling you right now, Evie and I, is we have come up with these findings. We, and I include Barbie and Candy and people like us, we knew about cloning decades, long before there was an internet as such, as people know it today.
Yeah.
So that's another key point to make, is the juxtaposition between the ceremonial magic aspect and the high-tech aspect in regards to genetic hybridization and cloning, and also how a lot of it has to do with creating the conditions necessary for certain types of entities to take up these hybrids or these clones. And so with that being said, would you like to talk about what your definition of the hyperdimensional interference is and how it manifests in people's lives?
Well, I just wanted to comment real quick on the cloning, because I think it's a type of replication or copying, which kind of goes back to some of what Dr. Malonga also observed. There's a type of replication process that it may not be exactly the same as cloning, but it was something that actually Carolyn Hamlet mentioned it, like the reptilian replication factor from a single cell. They're able to reproduce like an entire being a particular way because reptilians are different. And then they could put it like in an ovum of a human being and it could replicate into a reptilian hybrid. So there's different ways, I think, of creating what I call hybrids. They're maybe not true hybrids. They might be chimeras or augmented people with genetic, you know, sequences from here and there. So I think it's more complex than what people want to believe. But yeah, I think it's been going on definitely for a long time, and that there really are beings that appear to be non-human interacting, and it's not all military. And this has been going on for thousands and thousands of years, or apparently thousands of years. So, you know, sans the time travel things going on, but that's very complex. I don't want to go there on the time travel stuff. So
we'll save that for a future show because in the Deep Black MyLab operations, as you know, alternate realities are explored, voyages to other worlds in the far distant cosmos and in other parallel realities are the norm. And it's not as it's much more complex than people know. So we'll just save that for another show, Evie. If you want to talk about the hyperdimensional aspect while we still have time in the first half, that would be great.
Well, hyperdimensional, that's actually something that's more defined in the dark side of Cupid relationship, for example, where let's say it's not necessarily ETs or aliens that appear to be responsible for orchestrating a love relationship, but it's more like there is an attached entity or being that is overshadowing either the relationship itself or one person in particular, or let's say a full-on possession situation. And those are pretty palpable when they do happen. They're pretty obvious, and I have several cases that demonstrate that kind of interference that's not necessarily alien abduction related at all. It's just a hyperdimensional being functioning on another level that's interacting for the purpose of what I call the louche and the energy vampirisms. There's a lot of the psychopathology involved with the hardcore possession cases or even partial possession cases. And they tend to target, you know, I think that there's some people who are targeted who have vulnerabilities. For example, let's say Milabs or people who have a lot of unresolved trauma, or they may have, you know, SRA or, you know, child abuse, that sexual abuse. And they may have this kind of thing happen to them more often, or they may find themselves in relationships with these psychopath narcissists, for example. And then the narcissist could be hosted by one of these non-human hyperdimensional beings. But really, it's not just people who have vulnerabilities that get in these relationships, that there's some who basically don't display these kinds of childhood trauma histories necessarily or unresolved traumas, but they're still victimized because the beings who are, let's say, acting within this predator type of host or partial host, that because they're predators and they work by deceit, they're really good at deceiving and seducing and predating upon people who ordinarily wouldn't even get caught up in this kind of thing. And that's why I wrote about it in my book, because one of the number one reasons why they have gotten caught up in this was because they didn't even know it existed. So that, you know, the knowledge of this is really important because it could save lives. Because I know people who nearly died, and there's probably people who have died over this, you know. I mean, it could be a form of murder if you ask me. You know, all you do is get set up in one of these dark side of Cupid things, and then that partner is like a lethal host predator type that just takes them down to the ground and absolutely destroys their life. And it's not just a narcissist. These things are very lethal on a supernatural level. That's what I believe. But the hyperdimensional thing is like, I mean, really what it is, it's interdimensional handling. So you know how in MKUltra or SRA, or satanic ritual abuse, cult abuse, they will be assigned handlers and controllers, or even programmers, that it may be another physical person. But a lot of times in the ritual abuse and even the abductions, I mean, they will have alien entities that can function as parasites or attached entities that work to handle them and keep them under control to carry out their agenda. And so I believe that this kind of handling is taking place so that, let's say, you know, if somebody's waking up, right, and they're wanting to do the recovery work, let's say they're a MyLab or an abductee, and they want to get to their memories, and they want to get to the truth of it, then a lot of times they're set up in one of these things by a person who doesn't appear to be an overt handler, like a government, you know, agent kind of thing, where they know they're a handler, right? But they're somebody who's hosted or partially possessed, and they're still acting out on this entity working through them. And it's like a hyperdimensional system of control and connections between people that takes place on that level. And I know that this takes place, like the people in these SRA cults and these high-level bloodline cults, they have got this down to a science. You know, they traumatize them, and they put them through rituals, and the rituals may invoke certain beings or act to link these beings in with the person. And then that being actually controls the mind control program, or it keeps them under control, and it handles them in a certain way. So the handling takes place on this hyperdimensional level. So when many people wake up from these traumatized histories and they want to recover, you know, they want to heal, they may find themselves being handled interdimensionally. And it's very weird because this is what's strange. A lot of times they target people with very high vibration. Okay, so there's this interdimensional thing that can be explained by the ancient Gnostic scriptures about the whole Yaltabaoth, Demiurge, and the Archons, and how they were trying to keep down people who have become too aware because they can't keep us under control and feed on us or whatever, right, and keep their system here. So whoever, like, is super high vibration, very aware, and, like, pure goodness, that they are attacked more easily. And so the minute you start waking up and vibing high, or you start having memories, they'll slam down on you with interdimensional attack or handling. And so that's what many of us have discovered, you know, even as researchers, that, you know, you go into the Pandora's box a little too deep, and you go into recovery, and you start waking up, and you're having these lucid dreams, and you start seeing the players behind all this, then that's when they start really honing in on you to mess with you through the hyperdimensional interference. So I'm sure that you could say, yes, James, this has happened to you too, because it happened to all of us.
Yes, it's happened to me. I mean, just learning the nuances of the the software editing, the audio editing, to learn how to do a podcast. My friend and mentor, Deborah Jane East, she's teaching me all this. I mean, she has seen for herself this strange AI, alien artificial intelligence interference that's taken place. She saw things that she'd never seen before when we were working together on TeamViewer, and she was teaching me the nuances of how to do this. So it manifests in myriad ways, and it works through people, it works through technology, it works through any kind of a wireless connection. That's what people need to understand, that this alien artificial intelligence is hyperdimensional in nature, and it manifests through people. And also, it seems that it's setting up the conditions here on the surface where it will be a simulation matrix on steroids, because now we're hearing stories of people playing the Pokemon game, falling off of piers. They're being hit by cars. They're running around because they're ensnared in another form of the matrix. It's interesting. So also, you mentioned earlier, before we came on the air, you talked about a case you referred to as the Mephisto Phallus case, where some entity or something, go figure, decided to call itself Mephisto Phallus and started messing with somebody.
Yeah.
While we have time before the end of the first hour, can you talk about that a bit?
Sure. This is the Amy and Thomas case in The Dark Side of Cupid. And Amy was somebody who's experienced, you know, a 10-plus year relationship with a Dark Side of Cupid affair, which was really hard for her to let go of because of, you know, the love spell aspect, the sorcery aspect, that this was actually really, it was really a sorcery thing. And she went to a chiropractor who, you know, did some adjustments on her, but then right after this adjustment, it was like her energies and her kundalini was activated, and she started feeling these wonderful energies. And it wasn't just the adjustment, because she's had many adjustments and this kind of thing doesn't happen. But, you know, as she started going to see this chiropractor, she, you know, he was charismatic, and she noticed that every time, like, he touched her, you know, like these energies, like these, you know, sensual, sexual energies would come through. So they ended up having an affair, and she, you know, was very obsessed with him, and, you know, he was astrally visiting her probably within the first week that they even connected, right? And, you know, doing the love sex, astral sex thing, and, you know, amplifying her energy field. And then so she ended up getting together with him and having this affair, even though he was married. And so she was so, you know, in love with him that she decided that, you know, she would change her religion to be his religion, right? And he was, Judaism was his religion. And she was, I don't know if she was Christian or New Age or whatever she was, but she changed her religion. But what she noticed is that, you know, these beings that were connected to him, there were certain beings that were connected to him that were like familiar spirits. And some of them were classic Nordics in biblical-looking robes who I'm just going to read you an excerpt from the book. She actually thought he put a spell over, which I think he was a sorcerer. He actually did, because he had one of these familiar spirits working for him. Many spirits came to me to lead me further on that spiritual path. They watched over me and seemed to monitor my progress in that religion. They were Nordic spirits in biblical-looking robes, who not only upheld the connection between the doctor and me, but they blessed our union, which really had the effect of keeping me imprisoned, as it were, in the obsessive relationship. So she talks about she saw this familiar spirit that she saw in certain forms of witchcraft, and that she observed in one of these ancient books of Solomon, like the Magic Solomon, whatever. And it was a troll type of spirit. So this troll type of spirit would always like show up, but it was like the familiar spirit of this chiropractor guy. And so she described him as a short, dwarfed, and odd-shaped spirit, very dark in color, with a large, bumpy, misshapen head, a troll spirit. And she said, believe it or not, I've actually seen pictures of the same spirit, which led me to believe that it's a demonic force, which has been used before by others in occult circles for advancement in the material world. This spirit has been with the doctor for many years and is still with him to date. And so it was like a big pot belly. His legs were shorter than usual, upper torso. It was just a very weird shaped one. But she saw the picture, and she said, and then on that picture in that book on Solomon, it was Mephistopheles. So these spirits, these familiar spirits, were linked in with this doctor. And so I think he used these spirits to to give power and control in the world, not only sexually over her, but in material ways as well. So that's why it was really hard for her to unlink herself from this particular love bite. So I just wanted to say that because it was linked in with his religion. And she, it was so funny, when these spirits would show up, she was very psychic anyway. She would call them the butt uglies, and she'd say, like, the butt uglies showed up. Oh, my God, you know, because they were really ugly. So, yeah, so these kind of things happen when, you know, when you're with a sorcerer who manipulates energies, they could actually put kind of like this spell over you where it's actually very hard to extricate yourself from that kind of predatorial, quote, love bite, because they can create bliss. In fact, she would have these, you know, visitations during the witching hour nearly every night for years, where she would be in, you know, tantric, ecstatic sexual bliss, writhing on the bed, where her energies would be completely activated sexually from a distance by this guy. So he didn't even have to be physically present. Some of these things are happening in the fake twin flame thing. And what I'm thinking is really happening is they are linking up with the beings that are the familiar spirits. And there's more that I could say, depending on how much time we have before we go on to the next thing, because this is important.
Yes, we can talk more about this in the second hour, of course, because we need to really go into depth into these aspects of it to give people an understanding of the scale and the depth and how up close and personal this becomes. Because I alluded to the fact earlier that many people look for these people in the field who seem to know what they're talking about, who seem to say the right things, but because they have not learned how to detect energy fields, because they have not learned to listen to what their physical body and their energy body tells them, and they're too much kind of in their headspace, they listen too much to the words of these people, vice the energy they give off. So they wind up having consults online with these people. They wind up interacting with them in some way. And like you mentioned, before too long, this guru, this healer person is astrally raping them, playing mind games with them, messing with their computers, because the entities working through them have the means to, in AI, ghost of the machine fashion, mess with people's technology.
Exactly. And this thing is serious, because what I see is that some of them, what they're doing is they're trying to get you through an agreement of entrapment to, let's say, have a ritual marriage or wedding with, let's say, the twin flame that you're astrally connecting with. And they'll want you to have this ritual marriage, and these beings will come to you, and then they'll want you to be like, oh, married to them, and it'll be some kind of sacred union, right? Sacred twin flame thing. But what they're really doing is that through the love bite, let's say the partner, that they're using the image or that person, they're using that person basically as a soul entrapper from the entities that are working through them. So what they're doing is, when they do this marriage or this twin flame union in the astral, and they get their agreement to marry them, let's say, and they do this, and they're basically they're doing a proxy marriage to the entity or the dark lords that are working through them. And sometimes it's Lucifer himself or Satan himself or some other being that basically, when you connect with them, you create an agreement of entrapment that binds your soul to these beings. And that's what's extremely dangerous. You don't know until after it happened, and then all kinds of weird shit will happen. So that's what I just wanted to say, because I'm seeing this more and more with the false twin flame thing.
Yes, and there are implications for one's future incarnations even. If these cords and attachments are not removed, if one does not divest themselves of these cords, attachments, hooks, ethereal energetic implants, whatever the case may be, that can follow them into a future incarnation and cause problems for them further down the track.
Yeah, that's what we found in, you know, healing sessions, that, you know, if you go to the origin, sometimes the origin goes back to a previous life connection. A lot of times that's why you'll have a strong connection with someone. And then maybe because you really do have a karmic connection, and that's very valid. But sometimes, let's say that person was a sorcerer, or, you know, they took vows or some kind of commitment to them, so that every lifetime they keep running into this and becoming a victim over and over again. So it's up to the person, when they're aware, to break those agreements and to resolve those traumas once and for all time, past, present, and future, to cut off that link, So if you just, you know, do cut cords, you know, sometimes it can work, but you have to go to the origin of these agreements of entrapment. And that's what we're finding. It's really all abiding by some kind of spiritual law.
And you can talk about this in the second half, Evie, because you are a holographic kinetics practitioner and you know this information and you're in a position to teach others and to heal others of this. So we're at the end of the first hour. You've been listening to my very special guest and my dear friend, Eve Lorgan, one of the top researchers in the field of alien abductions, the drama of the love obsession, the alien love bite, hyperdimensional matrix interference. So we're going to take a break, a short break, and then we will meet you at the top of the hour. For those who want to listen to the second hour, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com and be a subscriber. You're helping us. You're helping us expand our outreach. Okay. So we'll see you in the second hour.